counter-programming to the whole punk thing, that was announced before that all happened.
They did, yeah.
But I do wonder if he was going to be quite so open before something like that had happened, because...
They had Austin out there kind of saying, like, you know, there's no holds barred on this thing, I'm gonna... We'll talk about what we're gonna talk about, but...
Yeah.
I do wonder, like, you know, originally... Like, the when they started talking about it, it was very much like, you know, this is the Attitude Era's hottest storyline. They're going to talk about, you know, like, it made it sound like they were going to talk about the old days.
Yeah, and they did
for a while.
But there was definitely, like, a lot of punk talk in there, and there was, you know, surprising number of little tidbits, like the Macho Man bit
stuff. Yeah.
Which he did not elaborate on at all, mm-hmm. other than to say, yes, he will be in the Hall of Fame at some point.
Right.
Watching before that showed up on the archive, I was watching a couple episodes of Monday Night Wars, and I kept seeing at least one of them, Lanny Poffo, just kept showing up in interviews talking about the Macho Man and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, hey, it's the genius.
Mm-hmm.
Leapin' Lanny.
Acknowledge him as such, goddammit.
At least call him Leapin' Lanny, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
The most interesting thing to me about that interview was whenever Vince was in a position where he would have to self-describe, he would go on these very long, rambling sort of tangents, like when he was talking about how, you know, the reason him and Steve Austin had such chemistry is that he himself believes himself to be sort of the Steve Austin character in real life. Like, he's not really a fancy businessman. He's more of, like, you know, kind of a down-home redneck kind of dude.
Yeah, I mean, he's a fucking huckster. Like, he's a wrestling promoter, of course.
He grew up in a trailer park, you know, like, that kind of shit. So, but he, like to get to that bit, he spent, like, 9 minutes just sort of, like, going over his history and, like, you know, just trying to come up all these examples for justifying. You can tell that, like, there's definitely, like, a little bit of insecurity in him. Mm-hmm. In a way that you never see presented anywhere, like, even in, like, the rare interviews he does give outside of the company.
Oh, I think you see it all over the programming, though.
Right.
You know, when they're very quick to say, like, hey, this was the number one highest-rated program, like, hey, we're fucking cool. Fuck you.
Right.
We're cool.
But not something you see when he talks, but, it's, like you said, yes, absolutely, it represents in the product itself.
Like, we're
on a regular basis.
Right. Yeah.
Because he's really good at it. I mean, he can be pretty long-winded as an interviewer, too, mm-hmm. but, like, in a way that gets people to talk. So,
right. And he's been there.
Yeah.
You know? Like, he's able to put a lot of people at ease because he has been through, like, his career fucking hit all levels.
Yep.
You know, he was fucking on the skids, fucking journeyman, jobber, fucking...
He was a superstar on the outs at one point.
Right,
you
yeah.
know, like...
You know, he's been a lot of fucking things.
Also, still to this day, one of the nicest interviews I've ever done.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, I was super intimidated to have to talk to him, but, like, dude immediately put me at ease, like asking him questions.
Seems like an alright guy.
Yeah.
Thing I kind of realized, like, you know, I guess, you know, maybe this is obvious, but I feel like unquestionably he is the biggest of all time, like kind of fuck Hogan, Flair, like whatever, like when you look at what he did, how he did it,
yeah,
and the impact it had on culture and all that other stuff at the same time, like where wrestling was from a societal standpoint.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of it, you know, had probably very little to do with him.
But as a personality.
Yeah.
And as a figurehead.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Like, Hogan, you know, Hogan existed in the same kind of space that John Cena does now. He was extremely appealing to the younger set, especially. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were plenty of adults that liked him, but he was definitely, like, the one who brought the kids back time and time again.
Yeah.
I think that Austin I don't know. I feel like Austin sort of helped make wrestling seem cool again to an audience that maybe would normally grow out of it at that period.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his legacy has endured, will probably endure in a way that maybe like someone like, I mean, Hogan's always going to be considered one of the biggest of all time or whatever. But
yeah,
like,
totally.
A lot of people think he's also kind of trash, you mm-hmm. know, just the way he's treated people and the way his career has been at various points. Austin, he burned real bright for a relatively short amount of time and then just got out.
Right. He has the benefit of, like, whether it's the injuries or whatever, like, you know, he can't do what Flair is doing.
Right.
Or what Flair did, what Hogan did, you know.
Yeah, he doesn't have to keep coming back, too. Like, he's right. found a way to sort of, you know, to keep his career going in a different space and to, mm-hmm. to sort of, you know, keep himself in the public eye without having to go back to wrestling. I feel like The Undertaker is someone that will probably be revered in a similar... I mean, you know, not as era-defining in a way, but like...
Right, yeah.
As a guy that, you know, sort of represents, like, various eras of the company.
I think Undertaker, you know, is one of those things where, like, if you're a fan of wrestling, then yes. But, you know, like, to... From an external perspective, like, you know, he never hit the mainstream. You know, he was...
Yeah.
He was working heel for so many years.
And he never really tried to work... outside of wrestling.
Right, yeah, yeah. I mean, he, you know...
He was in Suburban Commando, and I think that was about
right.
it.
Right, and, you know, he was very protective of the character and all that sort of stuff in a time when that mattered. So, like, yeah, I think that limited his, like, mainstream appeal to a
yeah.
certain extent. But, like, yeah, from, like, a, you know, are you a fan of wrestling? Like, in many ways, he is the ultimate fucking embodiment of that shit.
Yep.
In such a way that, like, it's fucking super interesting to... hear Vince McMahon mention him by his real name.
Yes.
Or, you know, and like, you know, just like seeing fucking Michelle McCool posting Instagram photos and here's The Undertaker doing the ice bucket challenge. You're like, what the fuck is going on? Like,
the Phenom! What the hell?
Like, why is it? What?
You know, the wall, I think, if it wasn't torn down already, it is now.
Like, I feel like that was like the last bastion or something. Yeah. It was like, you know, the Undertaker is not gonna fucking appear out of character. And then he very much kind of started doing that.
Yeah.
And I think that's cool. I don't know. Like, as someone who's, like, way more interested in the behind-the-scenes machinations of that business.
Yeah.
Than the fucking tripe they're putting on television every week.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, like, that to me is super fascinating.
Like, that was the part of the interview for me that, like, kind of rang the most false, which I think it kind of had to be, because there was no way for him to frame that conversation without throwing people under the bus,
yep.
was just this notion that, you know, like he asked him repeatedly, like, you know, about, like, why is the opening segment always so long, you know, like, when you have so many different writers working on this stuff, like, has it really gotten that much more complicated that you need all these people
yeah.
doing this stuff? And... You know, he just kind of didn't really have a good answer for that other than to say, you know, we're just trying to build stories, we're trying to do this, we're trying to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the most concession he would ever give was that sometimes it hits, sometimes it doesn't. And I think that's
right.
all he can say,
yeah, yeah.
but
yes,
still.
Without, you know, without sinking the production end of things, who are his actual employees.
Yeah, like he's not going
to
say Kevin Dunn fucking sucks.
Yeah, as
business,
opposed to
you know?
The independent contractors, which he is more than willing to throw into the bus.
Right. I also think it's just a little bit, it was a little disingenuous that when he was talking about the millennial stuff and he was talking about guys in the locker room not willing being willing to step up, like.
That is the message you hear time and time again. I feel like Triple H has said it
yeah.
multiple times. And it's one of those things where there's a real, like, do as I do, not as I say, almost.
Yeah.
In this case, where it's like, they're, like, or do as I say, not as I do, because that's. It seems fucked. Like, there's a super mixed message with that.
Yeah.
Because, like, when you hear about, you know, the way promos are scripted, the way that, like, everything is tight and stifling and all this sort of stuff, but they'll be the first to tell you, like, oh, the superstars have all these tools to get over and all this, you know, like, they just need to fucking go for it. And it's like, well, okay, yeah, but if they're in this fucking 5-minute segment where they have to do this to your spec, like, if they go off script, are you ever going to put them on TV again?
Yeah.
Unless they go off script and fucking hit. You know, if they fucking hit a home run, like, you know, they're asking these people that have very few other options for employment to risk it all one night on live television.
Yeah.
You know, or...
And it's like, you look at someone like, you know, I mean, he's sort of the internet's favorite boy to talk about, but like, you look at Dolph Ziggler, there's no part of that dude's career up to this point where I would say that guy has not been giving it his all. It's not like that dude is not going out there and busting his fucking balls trying to find a way to get the crowd behind him.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you know, but at some point, I would maybe argue that, like, at some point he should have said, like, really, Dolph Ziggler is what you're going with?
Yeah, or, but that's a name, you know, he, like, probably got stuck with pretty early on, you know? Like, I feel like he got that pretty...
Yeah, like, he probably was not in a position. But, you know, like, Austin worked as the ringmaster for a time and then said, hey, look, let's try something different.
Yeah. And I wonder if maybe there is just that resistance to the notion of talking back. Like, someone says, this is what you're doing tonight. And there's a part where, like, they were talking about Austin and some of his difficulty, like, working with
him. Yeah, yeah.
And he was saying, that, like, you know, they would present him with creative, and he would just be like, nope, not doing that. And they would be like, well, do you have an idea what we should do instead? Be like, nope, I'm just not doing that.
Yeah.
And I bet there's nobody in that locker room, maybe a Cena accepted, that would say that.
Yeah, like,
now.
Maybe Cena could do that, but one gets the impression that he never does.
Yeah. And, like, does that put them, you know, in dire straits if they actually do talk back and be like, well, what if we did this instead?
I think it depends on your rapport with management. Yeah. You know, that seems to be the thing that also comes up over and over again. It's like, you know, you have people who have Vince's ear and people who don't. And CM Punk always seemed like he did. Even if, you know, like, he's out there saying that, you know, Triple H is a fucking had it out for him and sucks and whatever. You know, that idea that, like, yeah, you can get a hold of Vince McMahon and fucking, like, really hammer some shit out.
Yeah.
Like, how many people on that roster would you say have that opportunity?
Maybe two or three.
Yeah.
And it's all, like, the top-level guys.
Of course, yeah. You know, if you're...
Like, Bray Wyatt's not going in there and be like, what if we don't do this?
Right. I mean, but, you know, like, at some point, you'd think he would be able to.
Yeah. He was someone that Vince talked very highly of throughout that interview.
And, you know, like him and the guys from The Shield, right? I mean, they mentioned them all by name. And, like, I feel like those are all guys that may eventually have that rapport. But they're all super young.
Yep.
You know, you can't expect them. And they're at the top of the card in a lot of cases. And that's the crazy part, is you've got, you know, guys that just...
Well, it's sort of like that period at the beginning of the Monday Night Wars where, like, a bunch of the older... team, like the stalwarts had left.
Sure, sure.
And so they had to start trying to build the company around those younger guys. You know, they weren't all ready, but they were figuring it out.
Yeah.
It took them some time.
Yeah, and now it seems like that there's just less of a, and you know, like if it's Vince calling the shots and he looks at it as like there aren't a lot of people that have the ambition, I can understand why he wouldn't want to pin the company's hopes on a lot of the people on the roster.
Right.
If that's his true feeling about that roster, then of course he'd be like, yeah, I mean, we have to fucking tell these people what to do because they won't come up with it on their own.
Right.
You know, like, that's the message there.
And that's where I think the mixed message comes in, because there is this sort of culture of, you know, like you said, do what we say, not what we do, but also, you know, they're sort of being told, well, you have to come up with the, you know, you have to show us that spark. So how do you do that when you're working within those very rigid confines?
Yeah. And he talks about stuff like social media or whatever, as if that's, you know, like a magic fucking bullet, like someone's, you know, if that was the case, like, wouldn't Zack Ryder be a bigger deal?
I mean, he was for like 6 months,
I guess. Yeah,
and that didn't work.
He's injured right now.
Ah,
but yes.
I just think it's interesting because, like, there was a you know, just a weird example, but there was a promo that I guess Nikki Bella cut during SmackDown about AJ, and they ended up slicing out 2/3 of it. Because it was apparently, like, too mean and too raw.
Mm.
But I read it, and I looked at it, and I was like, I mean, this is really no meaner than AJ saying on TV that talent isn't sexually transmitted, you know, like...
Sure, sure.
This just seems like she just kind of went beyond her normal scope of, I'm the top diva, wah-wah, whatever.
Mm.
Like, she actually kind of went in on her, and they decided to cut it anyway.
I mean...
And I'm wondering, like, well, okay, so she went out on a limb there, and you're just kind of slicing this up, so what's the message there?
Maybe she delivered it incredibly poorly.
That is also possible.
You know, like, she's bad at talking in a lot of cases.
I mean, the pieces they showed on SmackDown, like, the little bits that they left in,
yeah,
It was one of the better ones she had cut.
Yeah, alright.
She seemed legitimately mad, which was the first time I could say she felt that she seemed like she was expressing a real emotion.
Yeah. But that's also, like, one of those things where it's like, you might be able to argue that, like, that's not the direction for that character.
Sure.
You know, like, that's... And they have to look at her, like, you know, as much as I don't like her, like, I feel for their position in a way, because by being on the fucking reality show and all this other shit, like, they are under twice the microscope.
Right.
That the average person on that roster is. And there's stuff that they have to do to make sure that that show works. Like, the Total Divas, that machine keeps running.
Yeah.
And if the wrestling stuff goes in a fucking direction that makes those characters unlikable.
Right.
That hurts the mainstream thing, which, you know, is the thing that they really care about, is can we be a mainstream thing?
I also wonder if maybe, now that I'm thinking about it, they didn't want to give the perception they were just piling on AJ, given everything else going on.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, I watched, like, 20 minutes of Raw last night, and I was like, nope, I'm just gonna wait until this podcast is on the archive and just watch some other shit instead.
Yeah, I mean, wrestling is still Ron Jeremy. Wrestling is still Ron Jeremy telling you about how Trey Parker put him in his movie.
Yeah.
You know, and then
about how he has this actor's phone number and this actor's phone number.
About how he's doing a rap song with DJ Polo. Like, it, you know, like, right, it, you know, it is still that fucking desperate fringe thing that very much, like,
hence the grumpy cat.
Yeah, yeah. That is still a big deal. That is still big on its own. But that's never enough for it because it wants to be accepted. It wants to be.
Right. It wants to be the biggest thing.
Yeah.
It wants everyone to love it.
Right. Yeah, and that's when you see fucking Grumpy Cat and Larry the Cable Guy and, like, all this fucking desperate shit work its way onto the show, because that's the mentality.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't need to see an interview with Vince McMahon to know that that's the mentality.
Sure.
They're so desperately pushing that stuff.
Well, and it's, you know, he also pushed back against the notion that they don't have competition, because his way of framing it was to say that they're in competition with everything on TV.
Yeah, I mean, he's not wrong. Yeah. But
it's also, like, it does seem slightly deluded for him to believe that, you know, on some level, he's out there trying to beat everything on television, because what he's making is not a product that everyone will love.
Right.
What that company makes is not a universal thing, and never will be.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not.
So there's something to be said, maybe, for just, you know, focusing...
Like, super serving the biggest segment of your audience.
Yeah.
That's actually, like, the best advice for something like TNA right now.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, if you actually want to, you know, you still have a television deal, like, you know, do right by the audience that want it. And if you feel like they try to do that when they're all, you know, you get someone out there on TNA TV every 6 to 8 months going, like, this is wrestling, not sports entertainment. It's like, well, whatever, like.
I mean, if they were smart, they would go about trying to find the ways that the WWE is deficient. You know, like, if your television deal sucks, then find a way to get your product in front of people that isn't just TV. You know, like,
sure.
Work on your web presence. Like, you know, try and get your superstars in front of stuff that isn't just, you know, just on the TV show every single week. Like, find ways to get those personalities out there and make people care about them.
It's the thing about Lucha Underground that makes it so interesting, is, like, you know, it is such a different approach.
And a good one, I think.
I only saw that first episode, so I haven't...
So, episode 3 is awesome.
Mm.
I have not watched since then, but I've read a couple of recaps since then. And, you know, it seems like it's a little more up and down, but it's mostly been good, and the matches have been really good, and, like, they've actually... They've turned Chavo Guerrero, of all fucking people, into an actually compelling character.
Fantastic.
Like, his storyline of him just sort of being this, like, really hypersensitive, like, slightly unhinged representative of the Guerrero family that is just, you know, kind of, like, trying to make up for way too much.
Yeah.
Is actually really good.
Mm.
He's doing a good job on that show. I'm blown away.
Kerwin White had it in him all along.
I guess.
Yeah, that's
a cool show. Like, I'm really glad it exists, because, you know, the Lucha stuff is something you don't really see on American television outside of, you know, the WCW era, and it seems like it's framed in a way that is actually really smart.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't until I watched that Cruiserweights episode of that Monday Night War thing that I kind of realized that, like, yeah, I actually do miss that whole Cruiserweight thing.
It was so, like, it was kind of stupid, the number of good wrestlers they had in there, like, yeah. just kind of, like, making that undercard exciting. Like, yeah. Liger, of all people, had some of his best matches in WCW. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the shit that really got me back into wrestling, was watching that. Like, I, you know, I was into the NWO stuff, and I definitely was flipping back and forth between both shows, but, like, the Cruiserweight matches were the thing that, like, really hooked me.
Sure.
I didn't care about half the personalities. Like, I don't remember, like, what Super Callow's thing was or what Silver right. King was even doing.
No,
but
I just want to talk about La Parca.
Yeah. But they were fun to watch. They were super fun to watch. Like, Ultimo Dragon matches got me to go actually watch Japanese wrestling for the first time. I wanted to see what he was doing in Japan.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, wrestling needs to just embrace what it is. And
you know, if Vince really does have that sort of inferiority complex about, you know, whether wrestling is really meaningful in the context of what they do.
Right.
Then maybe that's not going to change for a while.
No. It's, yeah. It, like, he comes across almost as ashamed when yeah. you talk about it as just wrestling.
It's telling that he talks about NXT as, like, this great thing of potential for bringing up new superstars, but he also seemed kind of unsure about it when he was talking about it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're very glad, very proud of the NXT, you know, roster. You know, maybe the next Steve Austin will come from there. We don't know. But I also don't get the impression that he really, like, he never talked about any individual from NXT. He just said, oh, it's a good program.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things where you with people that are that new to the roster and all that other stuff, mentioning anyone by name fucking just breeds chaos.
Right.
At that level, I'm sure. Even what he did say about the people he likes and then saying, like, Cesaro is a work in progress, you know, like, that sort of stuff, I'm sure, just has to fucking...
That's gotta grind some gears,
yeah. Havoc.
Yeah, because it's... That was the weirdest one for me, because I agree, there is a certain aspect of Cesaro that has not maybe connected fully with an audience, but I also feel like that dude has... every time he has been put in a good position, they sort of yank away whatever that thing was that they were going to be pushing.
Yeah, yeah.
He was actually great as with the Real Americans. You know, he turned that into that stupid idea into
yeah,
something
that
was pretty
fun. Yeah,
he made that
work. Like, yeah, he absolutely made that work. And then, like, that's the thing. Like, coming out of winning that Battle Royal and having that fucking trophy and all that sort of stuff, like, that should have been it for him. That mm-hmm. should have been the moment, the springboard, the face turn, let's go. Like, it's what the company needs more of. Like, that they should have at least given that a full shot instead of just immediately backing off of it. Like, that's the thing. You know, it's like they seem scared and very tentative in a lot of their moves.
Yeah.
When it comes to stuff like that, it's just like they are very quick to change on some things and very slow to change on others.
Yeah.
And that's really aggravating. Yeah.
Anywho, yes, that is an interview everyone should watch at some point if they can. Still need to listen to the Punk interview, but I'll try and do that before we record the next Powerbomb cast.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, I wonder if they will address any more of what he had to say, or if he will have a response after that. I don't think he needs to. Yeah, I don't think the interview had anything that he would need to come out and respond to.
Yeah, I mean, if he wanted to, you know, if for some reason he wanted to extend an olive branch, him accepting that apology would probably, you know, that could be the one thing he would say, but I don't think he needs to or probably cares that much.
Yeah,
so.
It seems like most of what he did say in that interview didn't necessarily have a lot to do with Vince McMahon.
It was, yeah. And it's like the whole, you know, getting your firing papers on your wedding day, like that felt like more of just a cherry on top of a whole bunch of other bullshit more right. than anything else.
Yeah.
It is really amazing that one of the marquee things in that video game is that CM Punk pipe bomb, you know, all that, the feud that came after that. Like, he is a fundamental part of that product that they put out this year.
Yeah.
it is also sort of perfect that that game sucks.
Well, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's a bummer.
Can't spell shitty wrestling game without Yukes. No, Nat, go ahead, do the math, like that works out.
No, there's no U in shitty wrestling game.
Oh, fuck you.
Sorry.
That's right, there is no me in
there's
shitty
no
wrestling
K
game.
Either.
Well, look. I mean, spiritually.
Yes, alright, yes.
You think they'll ever ditch Yukes? If I ever fucking wise up and just go like, man, or do you think that that's actually the problem?
I think it's part of the problem. I think the impression I've got from both talking to people over there and just from just the state of the product over the last several years is that, and especially this year, I feel like they're starting to try and move away from them. Like they're having more 2K PC
right, like
people work on those games.
Yeah.
It's always been, like, it's always been Yuke's game engine, it's always been their gameplay, but, like, they're starting to take the art more for themselves,
right.
and you know, they've always had those THQ US people, but I feel like they've expanded that team more with the VC guys. And I'm wondering if that's just them laying the groundwork for eventually just taking the whole thing themselves.
Right, yeah.
But they're also probably nowhere near ready to do that, because they would have to build a completely different game engine than the one they've been licensing from Yuke's all these years. And, like, I don't think Yuke's is the full problem, but I also think that that studio seems to have no, whether it's via directive or not, they just have no, there's been no evolution, really.
Right.
Of that game, and it seems to have had the same problems for years and years. Even when they did that reboot a few years ago, it didn't really change that much. They just streamlined a bunch of stuff
yeah.
that had been fucked for a long time.
Right.
So I do think that, you know, as great as it is that they finally, you know, they moved over to the new platforms and, you know, they've given it the graphical bump or whatever, it's like, the skeleton underneath that thing is rickety as fuck.
Yeah.
And has been forever. And they really need to rip all the guts out of that thing and just redo it. And I don't know when they're going to have time or the
right,
resources
like making,
to do that.
Making an annual product. Like, you know, but like, you know, 2K seems like they are in a far better financial position than
yes.
THQ ever was.
Right.
To actually take that on. Whether it's, you know, it's a, if it's a fucking 2-year project that they're starting right now, if they're like, okay, we need to fucking, like, this thing is shit stacked on top of shit stacked on top of shit.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to be enough to rip out the animation system and replace it. It's not going to be enough to, like, build a new fucking lighting system to make these models look better. Like, that's going to get us good trailers and, like, we'll get where we need to go.
It didn't even get them that many good
yeah,
trailers
no,
this
know,
year.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Well, they were so fucking scared of that game.
Yeah. Which is funny, because, you know, I got the impression that they thought that game was going to be a lot more than it was. Like, that the reaction would be better than it was.
Yeah, that's... The lack of pre-release promotion tells me that someone with... Someone holding the keys to promoting that game knew better
yeah.
than to promote that game.
It just... That's my concern, is that because 2K is new to this whole thing... And, you know, they are starting to, you know, make some changes, trying to get that thing sort of operating at a high level again. But I'm wondering if at some point they're going to look at the amount of investment they're actually going to have to put into that thing to make it good and wonder if it's worth it.
Right.
Because, you know, THQ, the whole thing with THQ for years was that they treated that thing as just like a cheap cash cow.
Exactly, yeah. You know, it was just like by putting in as little as possible, they were able to just get a lot out of it.
Yeah.
Even after paying all the license fees and paying, you know, whatever they pay Yuke's and all that sort of stuff.
Like, right.
Yeah.
So, I, you know, in realizing the amount of work that really needs to go into it to make it something, you know, actually cool, I'm wondering if that's going to be more than they thought it would.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to imagine that at some point, everyone in charge of an annual franchise knows at some point that it's going to all break down for them.
Right.
Whether those people are in power or not, there are people on those teams. There are people on the Madden team that sit there and go like, you know, one of these days we're going to wake up and none of this is going to work anymore and no one's going to want it anymore. We have to fucking plan for that eventuality, whether it's...
And 2K Sports has that experience, too.
Right, so. Yeah. Whether it's, you know, okay, we need to overhaul one system at a time, year by year, like Madden does. Like, this is the defense year, this is this year. You know, and eventually we will get there just in time for a new console to come out and fucking reset all of the progress. Or they fucking make the investment and go like, look, we are going to fucking... You know, like, hey, 2K16 is going to be the exact same game with three new modes.
Yeah.
But 2K17 is serious fucking business. We are, you know, and they wouldn't say that publicly, obviously, because they can't sync next year's game.
No, no.
And on their way to the one after that, but, you know.
Like, I mean, the other cause for concern is that if you look at 2K Sports' output post-football.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. Like, hockey took a downward slope, and then they just stopped making it.
Yep.
Baseball took a real hard downward slope, and then they just stopped making it. Basketball, you know, I think has stayed afloat by virtue of the fact that their product was always so much better than the competition, and, you know, they're pretty nuts about that sport and
right.
that franchise.
Yeah, it's kind of the last thing that they're holding on to, but also, like, the online is broken every fucking year.
Right, and there are always little things that are fucked up about it. Like, they're never perfect, and... But that because they hold that one in such high regard, like, they still manage to brute force a really good game most every year.
Right.
I don't know if they're going to have that long-term dedication to wrestling the way they have with the basketball. Because they haven't shown it with other sports, not since football went
that's
away.
That's true. And you have to wonder, like, you know, like the sad reality is if they go and do this work and spend all this money, how many more copies do they sell?
Right.
If they turn out a great wrestling game, it's still a wrestling game.
Right, and they're still appealing to the WWE audience that might just be buying the crappy game every year regardless.
Right.
That's where the economics get weird.
Yeah.
I would really love to see someone make, not even like a simulation style, but just something weird or goofy or just different. Just a non-licensed wrestling game that could be something completely ridiculous. You know, something more in the vein, maybe of a WWE All-Stars or whatever, just license-free, who gives a shit? Make it, you know, an online-heavy thing, or make it, you know, like a story-editing-focused thing or whatever. Just make your own crazy shit in wrestling. Just do something different.
I would love to see an action-packed, like, gameplay engine for a wrestling game.
Totally.
You know, that is... It's the way that, like, it's the thing that drew me to, like, at the time, you know, like, you look at it now, it looks stiff and fucking ridiculous, but... At the time, like, WWF, Warzone, and Attitude.
Right.
Like, compared to those hockey games.
It was
like,
much more about moved. The presentation.
Yeah, the presentation was there. Like, you know, you could do those fucking moves and go, like, that's like television.
Yeah.
And it's the thing that, made WWE All-Stars so fucking cool, you know? Is that just kind of like, we're making a great video game first and foremost.
Yeah.
And we will fucking cram in the licensed bits around it.
It felt like a framework for something they could do something really amazing with down the road. Like,
right.
It was fun to play, and it looked really great. But, like, you know,
All-Stars was a first-generation product.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, if they had had a chance to iterate on it even once.
I think they could have done something really amazing.
That team, fucking Sal and fucking those guys, like, dude,
they
could have fucking nailed that shit. They did nail that shit. Whatever. I mean, like, even as a first-generation product, like, it was a fucking great... first stab at that shit.
It was the first surprise in that genre I had played in a really long time. I'd love to see someone else take a stab at it. It's a complicated kind of game to make because it isn't just like fighting, you know, it isn't just like punches, kicks, and special moves. Like, it's a lot of weird... There's a lot of weird shit to navigate to make that stuff work, but
and like,
you know what you're
adapting
doing.
Wrestling logic to a video game doesn't work, you know, a lot of the time.
Yeah. I mean, it's why the, you know, the chain wrestling thing was kind of fell so flat.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, you're right, this does feel more like the pace of a real match, but it also drags down the beginning of every match. It's just not that much fun.
And you're not even watching the action, you're watching the icons.
Yeah. So you're kind of seeing these animations transitioning kind of in the periphery, but mostly you're just staring, trying to find this fucking hot spot with the right stick.
Yeah. That stuff was super lame.
Yep. I think I want to say, like, Wrestle Kingdom or King of Coliseum or one of those games had something like that as well. So it wasn't even, like, that original of an idea. It was just...
Yeah. Yeah, those are all fucking extremely hard problems.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. I never want to present it as, like, this is an easy thing for them to fix. This is an easy change for them to make. Just make it good again.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, they're putting out a product every year, and...
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're on a fucking train that doesn't stop, and they're trying to fucking completely overhaul the train while the train is in motion. Like, you...
And sometimes that's going to go bad.
Yeah. But those games have sucked forever.
Yeah, I know. I know you don't like them.
The train was broken when it left the station.
I mean, in general, I agree with you. I did like 13 and 14 a fair amount, but, you know, the many years prior to that,
yeah,
pretty bad. Like, the whole SmackDown versus Raw era, I just would like to forget ever happened.
Like, that was like 06 or something when they first...
That was like 06 through 10, yeah.
Yeah, when they first started doing SmackDown, it was like a really great breath of fresh air.
Right, it was just, it was SmackDown, totally different. It was
a totally different engine, like, it looked good, it fucking, it was fast.
It moved, like, it played pretty well, you know, it was a little stiff in spots, but it played pretty well.
I ultimately, that's my thing that, like, that makes me really not like those Aki games, is the speed.
Sure.
The Aki engine is just so fucking deliberate, and that's fine if you want, like, a strategic, like, video game.
I just really like the balance of countering... and the sort of, like, the lack of reach that wrestlers have, so you kind of have to get in close, you have to get in on dudes to really do
anything. That's the thing, like, doing this Royal Rumble thing for the past couple of years, like, I have more respect for that game than I did when they were first out.
I am definitely not of the mind that any problem can be fixed by just going back to that style of game, like, automatically. Yeah. Like, that doesn't work.
No.
It's old, it worked for its time, I really love those games, but,
it has no fucking flash.
None.
You know, like, it's just...
Well, I mean, that is definitely, like, the fighting spirit game. You know, like, that is the game that is very modeled after the Japanese style of wrestling, where it's, like, dudes just fucking running into each other and slamming each other and not much else.
Right.
Which is fine. I love that, but it doesn't necessarily translate super well to the American product. It doesn't present it the same way.
Right. And that's the even, like, weirder, larger disconnect, is if you think about Vince McMahon talking about making movies, and the storylines, and the hooks, and, you know, like, those being the things that matter, and then the game largely treats it like it's a real sport without that stuff. I mean, they've got their story modes that they've boosted up year after year.
Or in this case, like, kind of sagged on.
Right. You know, they're trying to put some of that stuff in there, but it's so painfully static.
Yep.
You know, and it's so focused on, like, this year, you know, having them just, like, focus on, like, reliving this existing storyline, but we still have to have a good deal of video game content in here, so we're going to include all these matches that don't actually matter in the grander scheme of this storyline.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like, just... why am I wrestling through that fucking WWE Championship tournament that Rey Mysterio won when they literally just, like, bowl over that entire story bit, like, the second it's over with? Like, why? Like, I understand, you know, you think this is important in the context of things, but, like, the WWE didn't even treat that like it was important at the time.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure just someone had to sit down with, you know, tapes and match listings and go, like, okay... We want to do something around this storyline. What matches was this person in that we could build a 12-match video game thing around and give it some variety from a gameplay perspective? Because, let's face it, you know, the storyline was just these two people wrestling over and over again with slightly different stipulations.
And the problem is that, you know, while I appreciate that notion, because I like the idea of them digging deeper into the history of stuff and presenting it, like, I think the best part of that mode is the commentary. Because they actually talk about stuff that was going on during that time and kind of frame it in a better way. But, like, they just don't make the gameplay aspect of it that compelling.
Right.
You know, if you're not super invested in that match, like, if it's not the Punk versus Cena match where he's going to abscond with the title, there's not really that much excitement to it.
Yeah.
though I really could have done without them referencing Katie Vick at all. You know, like that. I really wish they hadn't even brought that up.
Oh, I think it's fantastic that they did. You know, like not burying their fucking dark history.
Yeah.
Like, not fucking ignoring their shit past. Like,
that's, like, you know, the one part I wish they would, though. Like, in most cases, I would agree, that's, like, the one thing it would be okay with them never bringing up again.
And you just had sex with a corpse.
It's just so unpleasant. The whole thing about it is so unpleasant. It even transcends for me the giving birth to a hand storyline shit. Like, that's, it's just, ugh.
I'm waiting for a high-res 1080p digital recreation of that hand being born.
Well, you might be in luck, because one of the DLC campaigns is the career of Mark Henry, so.
Fuck, really?
Yes.
Why would anyone think that that's a DLC campaign worth playing? What, who, no, seriously, what the fuck? Like, come on.
It's why Mark would... Henry, it's, there's an Ultimate Warrior one.
Okay, yeah.
And the other one I want to say is Christian versus somebody, Randy Orton versus Christian. From, like, the mid-2000s. That's their DLC. Those are their rivalries they're putting out.
God damn it.
Yeah, career of Mark Henry. I know. Like, I love Mark Henry. Hall of Pain. I'm all about it. But that dude's career, the number of, like, real super highlights I can remember from it is like, I can count on one hand. One
and
recently birthed,
yes,
hand.
You're going to give birth to that hand.
Yes.
This Christmas. Catch it.
Yeah. The line that actually stuck with me the most from that Vince thing was when he was sort of talking about the psychology of the... It just sort of, you know, like, it was talking specifically about the psychology between him and Austin during their bit. But he was mostly just, like, sort of talking more generally about, like, how he goes about getting the audience mad when he wants to get them mad.
Uh-huh.
He very specifically said the words, people don't like having the truth used against them. And I sat there and I thought about that for a long time, and I remember, like, all the times, like, we've talked about it, and I've seen other wrestling writers talk about how the heels in that company often seem like the most logical and sensible people. Like, they do fucked up things sometimes, but, you know, people talk about how Rusev isn't really much of a heel. Like, he doesn't really cheat. He's a nationalist.
Sure. Yeah.
But, like...
He squirms his way out of things. Like, that's the most you could say about him.
Yeah. Like, he's... But, you know, like, even some of the stuff the Authority has done. Like, yeah, they've kind of gone after people in a way that certainly makes them heels, but a lot of times they're just kind of saying things that are sort of true. And I'm wondering if that sort of plays into that notion, like, and why some people have a hard time really getting behind, you know, some of the heroes of that company, is because, in reality, a lot of the things the heels are doing are just kind of true. Like, those things they're saying are kind of true, and they're not really they're not really being heels. They're just kind of using reality against, like, they're sort of turning that against the audience.
Yeah, I guess.
Like, you're cheering for this asshole who doesn't really do anything. Like, he just... You know, he just runs in and beats up people even when he, like, that person is kind of vulnerable and not really actually doing anything that evil. You know, like, Cena just comes out here, talks a bunch of shit, makes a bunch of dumb jokes, and, you know, what does he actually do?
Right.
What did Team Cena actually do? Nothing.
Sure. Yeah.
It was just an interesting point that I hadn't seen articulated that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of made a lot of sense to me in the way that, like, just the way I tend to sort of latch onto characters these days, which tend to, more often than not, be the heels.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, even, you know, like, if you think about, like, but, you know, also it's like, you know, it's their truth.
Sure.
You know, to a certain extent, it's the truth as seen by the management and the heads of that company and that company's creative team. So when you get stuff like Triple H and Stephanie out there telling the audience that they will forget about Daniel Bryan, like, it's because they have been there long enough to know that that is probably actually the case.
Right.
And, you know, maybe that will go against it, but yeah, I mean...
And it gets a rise out of the audience, but, you know, at the same time, they're, like you said, they know. They've been there, right, and they've seen that happen.
Yeah, it's the way
it's a weird year for wrestling. Just
yeah, yes,
crazy year for wrestling.
It's a weird year for wrestling, and fucking, we pull all the strings, but at the same time, the audience can have an impact on it because if they get behind someone, we're kind of forced to react. Like
it's, right, that's why Damien Sandow is suddenly a thing.
Right,
you know?
It's like it's the most insane fucking live theater in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Because every week they have to fucking put that shit together in a slightly different way. And they have to, like, determine, like, you know, there's no shortage of fucking feedback. Whether it's TV ratings or fucking, like, their perception of the live audience or fucking what the internet has to say. And, like, every week they have to sit there and go, like, well, okay, what are we listening to this week? You know, or what's the consistent thing that we are using as our through line for determining valuable feedback?
There's a funny bit where I sometimes wonder how much of that feedback they are, like, completely absorbing, because there was a bit in Brandon Stroud's column, like, where he referred to Eric Rowan as an upside-down Sheamus.
Yeah.
And then that line somehow appeared on television within, like, a week of him writing that. And that's such a specific joke.
Right, yeah, that is. Yeah.
That I, like, he even pointed out in his column the next week of just, like, what are you guys, are you reading this? Like, I don't know.
It's man, you know, by all accounts, is a man who does not sleep.
Yeah.
And
I would bet the people who work around him are of a similar ilk.
Yeah, I bet that they fucking take in everything.
Yeah.
Obsessively want to know what people are saying about them.
Yeah.
And it's not just like a PR fucking, like, here's what people are saying about last week's show. Here's the binder of mentions. I'm sure they get that from in a mainstream sense. Like, here's, you know, hey, SportsCenter picked it up. Or you know, here's the newspaper that wrote about this. But, you know, that company seems like it probably has such a fucking exhaustive fucking PR file on reporters and all this other stuff. And
their, like, likes, dislikes, etc.
Yeah, they very much seem like that they would use that to be able to, like, you know, anytime a writer is critical of something, they're able to either take it at face value or just fucking go, well, fuck that guy. You know,
like, he always hates this shit.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they're able to be as insular as they want to be. Which is probably pretty fucking insular.
Do you know if game publishers still do that?
Yeah.
I've always wondered, because I knew EA had a file on me at one point. I don't know if anyone else ever did.
Yeah, that's... Yep. That still exists.
I would love to read one of those files someday. Not in, like, a I want to get angry about this kind of way. Just, like, I'm actually just super curious what they would write.
You know, like, about you specifically, or just
generally?
Yeah,
just, like, what sort of things are they harping on? What sort of things are they using to like, determine, you know...
Well, the one I saw didn't have you in it, so...
Okay.
But, yeah, and it was tailored to a specific event.
Right.
So it's sort of... It's not the full file.
Sure.
But, yeah, no, that stuff totally, absolutely exists. Like, there are still plenty of junior people at Edelman, you know, like, all these different PR firms and all this, you know, companies that are fucking, like, whatever. There are fucking people that are paid to listen to our podcast and distill it into...
Oh, yeah.
Into, you know, an evolving look at our thoughts on products.
There are people I know who were, like, listening to The Morning Show that worked in PR.
Yeah.
And I would always be sort of like, oh, right, okay, so people in the industry actually listen to this thing every time that happened. Like, they would mention something I said on the show. I was like, sometimes it seems like it's out of professional obligation. Sometimes it seems like they just actually like it, which is
Yeah, totally. They're definitely, like, I mean, we get a lot of people that listen to the podcast because they enjoy it and happen to work in the industry.
Right.
And that sort of stuff. And it used to not be that way. Like, the podcast used to be, like, the dumping ground for, like, you know, you could say damn near anything on a podcast, especially a 3-hour podcast.
Yep.
Because no one's going to listen to it, but that's not the case. Like, that podcast is fucking popular at this point. So, it's
one of the most popular things we do.
Yeah. Yeah, so there are people that are, I know for a fact that there are people that are listening to it and
right.
distilling the points down.
What a fantastic, bizarre transition that's been.
Yeah, I don't have fucking time for any of that shit. That was always really interesting to me. Like, you'd run into people, I'm sure this is probably still the case, but, you know, you'd be out at a studio or out interviewing people, and you'd encounter people that, like, have no idea what people are saying about their game.
Right.
Or, like, coverage of games. Like, they just don't absorb it. Whether it's, like, in some cases, it's because they don't give a shit about games. It's just like, I'm an artist, man. I'm making cool-looking guns. Like, I don't give a shit if, like, the jumping doesn't feel right.
It's I'm reading art blogs and Tumblrs. Yeah, like, I don't read game coverage. Yeah, no, I definitely run into that from time to time.
And that used to be really aggravating to me. Not from a fucking, like, well, how dare you not hear
right.
it? It was more just like, man, you're working on a game. Like, think about, you know, like, you should care about games. And I got to a point where I'm like, actually, you know, like, maybe the artist doesn't necessarily, like a texture, like, maybe in this case they don't actually have to care about games.
Yeah, I think that's true. I would say it pays to at least pay attention. Like, I'm not saying that you have to dedicate yourself wholesale to loving games, but I think it pays to pay attention to what people are saying about the stuff that you make, even if you are just, you know, a technical artist or you're making sound effects or something, you know, like,
right,
I think it's good to pay attention to what responses are to games that you make and that are like the ones you make.
Yeah, even if it's just, like, fan feedback. I certainly wouldn't say, like, again, like, this is not about me, this is not about us, this is not about, you need to be listening to what we say, like,
no.
Whatever, I don't give a shit.
No, I think, I just mean in a very general sense.
Yeah.
Like, when I was at Harmonix, you know, one of the big things was anytime any music game would come out, people from the team would go and they would play those other games just to kind of see what other people were doing.
Right.
And they would read the coverage of other games in that space and just kind of see, like, you know, what responses were to that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, that wasn't just the production team. Like, you would see the art team messing around
right.
with that stuff. You would see audio guys.
And I'm sure on some level, like, you know, those people are looking at those games because they like those types of games, you know?
Yeah. And they also want to just, you know, they want to see what people like and don't like about them and find ways to improve their own
product. One of the things about Harmonix specifically that I found interesting was, like, for as much as there was competition for the music game dollar, no one there ever presented themselves as, fuck that shit, it's made by someone else.
Yeah.
Like, there were plenty of people that were at Harmonix that would have every fucking reason to hate what Guitar Hero became. That were still fascinated by it, at the very least.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, you know, good on those guys for, you know, Neversoft for, you know, like, getting it done. Like, it's not us anymore, but whatever. Like, we're kindred spirits. We're all in this fucking same awful boat that
and
is sinking, oh God.
It's a bunch of biz dev guys that are making this battle the way it is.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Meanwhile, we're all just on the ground trying to make cool music games.
Yeah.
And I definitely, like, there were definitely people at Neversoft that I felt like were the same way. I think it was that one head dude that sort of, like, got kind of dickish at times. But everyone else there, like, that I ever talked to seemed like really nice people that were into what Harmonix was making. They just wanted to make Guitar Hero into a cool thing. And I, you know, I always appreciated that. I think there was a lot of respect. There was definitely some grousing about, you know, some of the business tactics or whatever. But, like...
Well, the business stuff. And then, like, I think specifically when... Like, was it, like, the Red Octane people got out there and said, we made that stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
well, when, like...
No, not, I mean...
Yeah.
Not really. Yeah, not really.
Yeah, it was... That was weird. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was like when World Tour came out, you know, I remember a bunch of days going into the test chamber and just playing World Tour. Like, not even just on a, you know, checking out the various design aspects of it or whatever. I'm just like, fuck it, let's just play through these songs. We don't have all these songs. Let's just see what they're like.
Yeah.
I had fun with some of those games.
But yeah, like, I respect and appreciate when people working on games have that type of awareness.
Yeah.
And that type of just, like, you know, like, hey, you know, like, there's this implicit understanding that, you know, it is a competitive business. And that does exist, but, like, it doesn't have to fucking permeate and ruin every facet of
right. It doesn't have to be mean-spirited or aggressive in a way that sort of that creates this sort of, like, friction between people who are essentially trying to make the same kind of stuff.
Right. And that, I mean, I don't know. Like, I feel the same way now about, you know, the outlets that cover games.
Yeah.
You know, like,
There's no outlet out there these days. Like, there are things that outlets do that I don't like.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, there are fucking scads of things
that
other people are out there doing that I just look at and go, fucking come on.
But there's, like, there's no there's no outlet that I just won't go talk to people from because, you know, they're our competition. I don't like them. Like, we had that mentality for a while
yeah.
at GameSpot, and I think that was something that was just kind of, you know, fostered over the years for reasons that no one was really entirely sure of why.
Yeah, yeah. It's.
I mean, when it was just us and IGN kind of at the top, and then, like, you know, 1UP came up, and they sort of added, you know, a fair amount of competition to the mix. I think there was, like, this, that very, like,
I guess,
entrenched
like,
mentality.
Yeah, like, I never took 1UP seriously. Ever.
I took them seriously in the sense that I liked stuff they were making, and it made me want to be better, because I thought that they were doing some interesting stuff. I think they had some really good writers. I think that, you know, the stuff they were doing with their podcast was, you know, at the time, very, you know, it was very interesting.
I never really paid much attention to it other than looking at, like, how they were handling the split between what went in the print magazines and what went on the website.
Sure.
And watching that struggle externally and just going, like, man, that fucking sucks.
It was a mess.
Like,
I mean,
that, and for the people on the website end of this, like, you could tell, like, looking at it, you just going, yeah. man, fuck that.
You could tell that there was a weird struggle there.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I'm sure part of that is, like, you know, like, we were previously the online presence for those magazines.
Right.
And, like, that sucked.
Yeah.
So.
But, you know, I think that entrenched mentality came from there not being, like, a breadth of competition. You know, there was a lot more print magazines. There weren't
right.
a ton of websites that were doing really well, at least at the time when I was there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like, when I first got in at GameSpot, it was, I mean, there was, like, some PC stuff happening, like, there, you know, I think Happy Puppy existed
yeah.
at that point.
I feel like GameSpy was maybe a bigger deal
yeah,
at that time.
Yeah, GameSpy. But, you know, like, that was still, you know, QuakeSpy.
Right.
You know, it was still, like, server software and the player matching stuff was still kind of the thing there.
Right.
And, yeah, I don't know. You want to know where that mentality comes from to a certain extent. Like, I remember the day, I want to say it was Happy Puppy. Fuck, I'm trying to remember which outlet it was, but it was when we were still on Clement Street. It was the very first GameSpot office. You know, so this would have been like 97.
Right.
Because I started in late 96. One day the intercom went on and Vince got on there and said, "We've just received word that I believe it was Happy Puppy, has laid off their entire editorial staff." And people clapped.
There you go.
Because everything was so fledgling back then, like, you know, it was one of those things where you're like...
You were just clawing for space.
We're one step closer to making it through this.
Right.
You know? Like, I understand why people yeah. would feel that way. You know, because it was incredibly competitive. And it's still... I mean, it's the thing is, like, at the business level, it still is.
Right.
Like, the sites of that size, what few of them there are left, are still competing for the same ad dollars in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
They are, you know, directly, like, when a company comes around and goes, "Hey, we're, you know, Mountain Dew or whatever the fuck it is. We have this much money to spend. Tell us how you would spend it." They are saying the same things. They are asking those same questions to IGN and GameSpot and probably Facebook and probably, you know, like,
yeah.
all this other stuff. So it is literal competition. It is literal, like, only one of us can get this money.
Sure.
Sort of type stuff happening at that level. But, like, at the product level, at the editorial level, that stuff just doesn't need to exist.
Yeah, way. I think at the time, I sort of, like I said, I understood it. But I think now, especially when you have so many different outlets that all, you know...
It feels weird even calling them outlets at this point.
Yeah.
It's just not, you know, it's not...
Sites.
The same
yeah.
stuff. It's not the same sort of thing.
I think that when you have that sort of standoffish mentality about other people that do your line of work, especially in an editorial capacity, I think it's stifling.
Yeah.
You know, I think it prevents things from evolving, and I think it prevents any sort of dialogue taking place. And I think that's been the best thing about the last several years of games media, is that people started talking to each other. And, you know, whether or not, you know, we're friends or whatever, like, at the very least, there seems to be conversations happening, and people are sort of like, you know... If nothing else, like...
Yeah, I can have positive interactions with people who work at other sites.
Yeah.
You know, yes, and I would not call many of them, like, friends. Like, I don't talk to a lot of people. I don't talk to a lot of people, period.
But you're at least able to sort of connect with them on a professional level.
Sure, yeah.
Which I think we had a hard time doing back
yeah,
in the day.
It is the same struggle. It is the same bullshit that everyone is dealing with.
Yeah.
It is the same... So, did you guys get the crew? No. Didn't get it. Okay,
yep.
Weird. GameSpot did. Huh, weird. Okay. Yeah. Why? Because they're GameSpot. Okay, all right. Well, fuck them. Fuck everyone. I started playing The Crew, by the way.
Oh, how's that?
It took forever to download, so I was only able to play the prologue before it kind of cut off.
Did your brother get murdered, at least?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that all happened, yeah. It's exactly like the beta so far.
Great.
But basically, I got to the point where it's like, here's where you go to upgrade your car. Now go out into the world. And it's like, this game is 8% installed. You should come back later. I'm like, well, fuck. Guess I'm going to go to bed. Yeah.
Well, all right.
I really don't like the handling of that game.
It's not good. If it's anything like it was, you know, when I played it, like, I don't know, like 6 months ago or whatever. It's not good.
It's like the betas were.
Yeah. I just don't understand how you can get that aspect of the game so fundamentally wrong.
I think that's one of those, like, it's...
like, that should be the first fucking thing you do, right?
Right, but I think that different people have different approaches for what they think is fun handling.
Sure.
And, like, they are trying to go for a kind of handbrake drift-heavy sort of whip-around corner sort of thing, but the it's not there. It's not where it needs to be.
Well, on top of that, that's a complicated way to make cars handle in a game. Like, to do that right is difficult. Because most games that have tried to be drifty, that try to do drifty stuff,
yeah,
are bad.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Like, you gotta have a real strong idea of how you want that game to handle and how you expect players to handle that. And nothing of what I've played of that game gave me the impression that they actually knew what, like, how to make that fun.
For me, like, that game would be more fun, and maybe it's one of those things where, you know, they need to have the handling suck because you have to level up your car to get it to work better.
Maybe.
So, maybe it's something that gets there, but right now, like, my frustration with that game is something that, like, I have across the board with games that do this. Like, it's not the initial loss of traction that is the hassle. It's when they make regaining that loss of traction and getting going in a straight line,
like,
difficult.
A long-term process.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, you're coming out of a turn, you find yourself kind of weaving back and forth as you kind of get it back in line.
Yeah.
That weaving back and forth is bad gameplay, I think.
And I think that when you introduce a player, even if you are leveling up your car and at some point that thing does become manageable, driving games especially, you can't have cars that handle like shit. It doesn't work. It makes the game not fun.
Unless it's like a bonus thing that you're like, you unlocked a bus, you know, like...
Yes, yeah, that's fine.
Like,
that's...
having your initial cars actually handle like shit is a hard...
Yeah, it's not like Assassin's Creed where, you know, okay, you start out with almost no weapons and you just gotta kind of, you know, get better stuff. Like,
right.
That's, like, at least in that situation, you can still do the stuff you need to do.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's one of those things that, like, you know, the upgrades in that car, in that game, are probably ultimately going to be meaningless.
Yeah.
Because the competition will scale right alongside you.
Right.
You know, so you're kind of always have a situation where, you know, everything remains competitive.
Right.
Which they have to do. I mean, whatever. If you could over-level your car and fucking blow them away in races, that might be fun for a little bit, but at some point you're like, all
right,
what,
right, that's
what
a different problem.
What am I even doing here? It's like Forza on easy over here. Come on. Like, winning these races by a full minute. But at the same time, like, you know, like, their idea of competitive AI is like, I'm going to pass this car on the final straightaway because that's how this game works.
Right.
You know, and at least in those initial races, the prologue races, like, it's very much... like, I'm still trying to figure out how the car handles, so I'm going to be a little bit all over the place and not driving to the best of my ability just yet.
Yeah.
But I will still eke it out at the very end because that's how this game works.
Yeah. Weird year for Ubisoft.
Yeah, man. Fuck.
I felt like last year they were in a really good place, for the most part.
Yeah, felt like they were getting there.
And even, like, the early half of this year, like, you know, Valiant Hearts was a cool game.
Mm-hmm.
Child of Light wasn't great, but it was at least interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
also, the other thing last year is, like, people still had hope for Watch Dogs.
Sure.
You know, I think that was the first sign, obviously, is when Watch Dogs came out, and you're like, oh, fuck,
yeah.
Damn it. This is not... Oh. This is not going to replace Assassin's Creed.
No, not yet, anyway. Yeah.
But it sold very well.
Right, yeah. I mean, that was
it came out at a time when there was very little else to...
Yeah, it was well-timed, and, you know, they'd had so much pre-release buzz around it that they were able to maintain that. It's like, you know, Far Cry 4 was at least good. It was a little rehashy, but it seems like it's good.
And I don't think Watch Dogs was a bad game, either. It's just, you know...
Deeply flawed in some ways.
Overwrought. Kind of just... boring. Which is almost worse.
Yeah.
Like, here's this totally competent game that you still don't really want to play that much.
Right. Well, it's like, I feel like open world games are the ones that suffer the most when they feel dull, because the whole point is that you're in this giant playground. The stuff in the playground should be fun. And if you're bored by it, like, you're essentially just wandering around this space not doing anything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that balance of, like, what is the right amount of side content and all that sort of stuff, like, that still seems hard.
Yeah.
At this point, you know, we've been through games like fucking Scarface or fucking, like, you know, Mafia 2 or, you know, like...
Oh my god, Scarface. I forgot about Scarface.
Fucking Scarface, right?
Dude.
Holy shit.
Oh, that fucking game.
Oh, that fucking game. God, the world is yours. Or like The Godfather.
Yeah.
Black Hand Edition. Execute people with the Wii Remote.
So stupid. I guess that was sort of like the height of games trying to be movies by literally just taking movies and making them into games.
Yeah, or just like, you know, the thing of like, well, fucking Grand Theft Auto got by taking these movies as inspiration and making them into games.
So what if we just took
the real movie and made them into a game? Oh, wait, turns out when you have to be literal to a movie,
it restricts
you in a bunch of fucking ways that, you know, suck.
Was it From Russia with Love was the Bond game they did, right? The old one that they redid?
Yes.
That wasn't terrible, but it also wasn't an open world game, so I had that at least.
Yeah.
But even that was just sort of like, this game really suffers by the fact that you are trying to shoehorn these gameplay bits into scenes that were not really that action-y.
And you're trying to, you're trying to create scenes that would fit in around the parts of this movie with your made-up character and all that, or whatever it is. Yeah.
Wasn't Scarface's whole conceit that literally the ending of the movie never happened? Like, they changed the ending so that he survived, and then there was this whole other crime saga that took place after it.
I forget. That sounds like something they would do.
I really want to say it was a what if. Like, their whole thing was, what if Tony survived?
It's just like Path of Neo, but with cocaine.
But instead, that was, like, the entire game and not just changing the ending. Yeah. God, Path of Neo. That came up earlier this year. I had also sort of forgotten about that game, but man, what a weird thing that was.
Yep. All those Matrix games were completely crazy.
I mean, Enter the Matrix, at least, it was a bad game, but it was interesting that they were trying to take stuff from the movies, like characters from the movies, and try and build something around that. Like,
well, it's like, it was the first, like, big, like, you know, here's this transmedia thing.
Right.
Like, we're accounting for the game's characters and story.
Like, it came out at, like, the same time as the Animatrix and all that stuff.
Yeah, it was, like, right before the second movie, wasn't it? Or
right around the time the second movie came out.
I remember getting a copy of that at E3 and going home. It was one of those things, like, pick it up from them at E3, just like Duke Nukem Forever, and take this home and start reviewing it.
And then
I remember going by to try to get a copy of Duke Nukem Forever once we heard that they were giving it out. And the reaction was like, who'd you hear that from? Okay, I'm going to walk you into this back room and I'm going to hand you one of these, but...
Do not.
Tell anyone that I gave this to you.
Well, I mean, it helps that no games come out during the summer anymore, so that doesn't happen anymore, but... Yeah, Path of Neo, God. Shiny's not still around, are they?
No, Shiny didn't. Shiny got merged into, like, the whole pandemic thing.
Right, okay. And
Or was it Foundation 9?
Let's say yes.
Oh, it's all blur at this point. David Perry made Gaikai.
Yes. David Gaikai.
David Gaikai made Gaikai. That chat ever start moving?
Nope.
Weird.
For all I know, we've been having this conversation with ourselves, which feels like a terrible waste now. Like, why would we have a conversation without an audience?
Exactly. Why would we talk ever?
Yeah.
We could have been sitting in silence this whole fucking time.
I feel cheated.
I say it's supposed to rain for the rest of this week.
I think today is supposed to be the heaviest. So, at least last weather report I looked at,
there was like 5 to 7 inches or something.
Which is good.
Yeah.
California needs it. You move to a place like the Northeast and you forget about things like droughts.
Yep.
I think when I moved here in California first, when I was a kid, it was at the very tail end of the last big drought.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 88, 89. Actually moved here also like 2 weeks after the 89 quake.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Did you see any of the, like, pictures of Napa after that fucking quake they just
had? I saw the photos of the guy skating over the fucking giant lump in the road.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah. To me, it was all the broken wine.
Yeah.
They're going, no, what are we going to do?
Oh, God, all these sad...
Oh, the wine!
These sad elderly people with their broken wine.
Yeah.
Napa will rebuild.
Yeah, it'll be okay. Turns out there's more wine where that came.
Yeah.
Here's what you're going to do. You're going to take the wine that survived, sell it for more money. How about that?
That Boom. Seems like something they might
Supply
do.
Supply and demand, maybe.
Call me when the earthquake swallows up all the vineyards. Then maybe we have a problem.
Yeah.
I feel like if you wanted to run, like, a terrible psychological experiment on my dad, like, if you wanted to really bum him out, just show him a lot of pictures of broken wine bottles.
Just, like, hook him up to an EKG machine or yeah. whatever. And
just monitor his brain activity. They're trying to snap him out of one of those comas from Brain Candy.
Yeah. Alley is clear, even.
What God did we please?
All right. Should probably turn this thing off.
Yes.
Go ahead and hit the button up there on the right.
Okay.
Hit stop, and then hit later. Later.
Later.
No, you hit something else.
I thought I hit this.
No, you opened email.
I'm sorry. I tried to hit this.
Yeah.